Welcome to the Desert Sanctuary with Carl and Laura Forehand.
Often when we have doubts about religion or simply want to ask questions, it can feel like we are wandering out into the desert.
We would like to invite you to join our sanctuary, the Desert Sanctuary.
We've tried to pick guests that would resonate with and challenge us and our fellow seekers here in the desert.
We believe that a key to the journey is to keep asking good questions, and we believe that all stories are sacred.
Our hope is that you will find life and healing for your body and mind, and that you will be able to be where you are and be who you are.
And now, here is our show.
Anyway, here we are. This is my son, JD. Joey's the name. Joey's the name I went by as a kid. I'm writing a novel right now, and actually it has the main character's name Joey. So it may or may not have something to do with me, but it's definitely not my life story. But some of the ideas and so on are actually inspired by real life or something like that.
Is it the these are based on true events, but the names and locations have been changed to protect the innocent?
Pretty much. I'm also trying to tie it into another novel, the previous novel, The Diner, that I wrote. Mm-hmm. So there's a character that I want to match up, you know. And just last night I was thinking how I could tie one or two others from that, the other book, into this one, so...
KCU.
Yeah, it's coming together. It's about a third done, but some days are better than others. How are you?
Well, you're doing more writing than I am. I spent a lot of time writing, but it was just making slides for my sociology class.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty much been taking up most of my time. That and photography. I did go to the beach for a little bit today, but I also did photography there, so that's pretty much my life, teaching and doing photography now.
Yeah.
Taking care of my dogs. Hopefully you can't hear the other dogs outside barking, but tonight's been a very loud night because there's also a temple festival that was, I think it's done now, but it was also going on outside.
So it's always lots of fireworks, right?
They didn't have too many because I think it was the end of the post game. They were just eating. Yeah. There was the whole street was full of tables for people to eat at. So, and they were singing karaoke earlier too. So it always gets loud. But yeah. So my neighborhood is just a pack of people, which is always, I feel like an old man. I feel like,
yeah,
Clint Eastwood in like the, whatever that movie is, just screaming at people like, tourists, get off my porch, get off my lawn.
Mom's coming in like a diva here. She's ready now.
There we go. That's right. Fashionably late.
That's what we call that. That's right. Well, I'm doing my nails.
Priorities, right? Yeah.
We all do our nails sometimes.
That's right.
I never do my nails. I have gotten to where I can clip them. Yeah, I can clip them now. That's about it.
Mom trained to do that all by herself.
Yeah.
Train, in air quotes.
Anyway, it's good to. I always start to say it's good to see you. But we're not seeing you. We're hearing you.
Well, it's the same thing. I find that oftentimes it's better to use your imagination anyway, because I'm unkempt. I'm just off the beach. Haven't cut my hair.
Yeah, me neither.
I did shave my beard. I had a big beard during the winter time. Yeah,
it's an alpha male beard, right? Sometimes
I don't know if it was, because the alpha male beards, for as like a lot of those guys talk about how grizzled and manly they are, they spend a lot of time manicuring themselves.
Indeed.
Mine was more like a wolf man or like a mountain man type, just mess.
We should talk about that, or maybe we already have, to talk about the man camps they're having, the alpha male camps. Yeah, we spray them with water and mistreat them and make them into quote-unquote alpha males.
Right,
It's a big deal right now.
That's sounds kind of like fraternity, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's just, you just haze each other, and that's about it.
Yeah,
not my style.
And I don't know, when we did we've done all this conference and elevating women's voices and so on, and it seems like, I'm not an expert on what women want, you know, but I start hearing things over and over again from different people. And one of the things they say is they want men to listen and stop interrupting them and things like that. Stop mansplaining when they're trying to tell you something. Listen, read their stories, things like that. I don't think they care, you know, how big your beard is and whether you know, it's not even like a survival course. It's like just some other, you know, weightlifter guys like you that want to torture other men and make each other feel better somehow. I don't know.
I think a lot of that culture, as with a lot of culture in general, is it's for themselves. It's obviously not for women. I mean, because I know most of the guys I know that, I have a bunch of friends that weightlift, not like alpha male weightlifting, but like they lift weights, and most of them, like some of them will be like, oh yeah, you know, I want to impress the ladies or whatever. And it's like, but it's not really about that. It's about you taking mirror selfies in the gym and liking the way you look.
Yeah,
I think the same thing for like fashion and also for women. There's a lot of like things I think women do that is really more for themselves, and that can be good. And I mean, it is what it is. You shouldn't be doing stuff for other people, but I don't know. And some of it's bad because like I have some people in like my life that I have to like help with. Like they have like, you know, well, I have one. Let's say student. I'll say I have a student. I won't give any other information, but the student has like pretty bad body dysmorphia, and so yeah, you gotta deal with that. But that student does a lot of stuff just because of that. It's like kind of for other people, but it's like only for themselves. So I don't know. It's complicated, and in the age of Instagram and TikTok, it's really easy to get a weird complex about a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah. Early on, when me and Mom were married, I was driving down the road and I saw some guys out playing football, you know, and I think they were college age-ish, you know, just having kind of a pickup game. And I found out pretty quickly it was a no blood, no foul kind of endeavor. And so I had a couple of, you know, knots on my head and a little abrasion on my face. And I came home and Mom kind of looked at me, not like, wow, you're an alpha male. She said,
yeah.
She kind of looked at me like, what did I get into, Mary? You know, somebody that does this.
A lunatic.
Yeah.
Anyway. I think we probably had a couple turkey bowls back in the day that were like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Probably nearly lost a couple teeth playing out there.
Yeah, so I didn't get out of that early, you know. And a lot of that, some of that was fun. Wasn't about proving you're a man.
Think,
it was just fun.
It can be both.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, you know, I'm sitting here kind of vacillating whether I should even talk about politics. And, you know, once we get into that, we're going to go. And I, you know, the thing that stands out today is Lauren Boebert. And I would be the last one to condemn someone, you know, because their child, you know, it's making bad decisions, right? But her situation's different, you know, and that she's loudly, you know, loudly yelled at other families and condemned other families just because they're Democrat, you know, or they don't believe the exact same faith that she has. And she's just almost clownish on stage at how she promotes white nationalism and all of those things, yet her family's in disarray, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of going home and fixing that, helping to fix that, contributing to fixing it. She's chosen to stay where she's popular, you know.
Yeah, well, it's the money and the fame, like it always is. It's usually not a hard question to answer why those things happen. But it's also a lot easier to condemn other people. And then when stuff like that comes up, just say, oh, me and my family would like some privacy now. It's like, right. Well, you're a public figure. You don't get that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't want to be in the spotlight, retire. Go work at a 9-to-5 office job.
Yeah, and if you are in the
congresswoman,
if you are in the spotlight, don't jerk someone off in a Beetlejuice show either, right? That's
I find it to be a pretty good idea not to engage in such.
That should be like a general rule, right? It's just not the place for it, right?
I don't think so. I think Pee Wee Herman, the actor of that, got in trouble for a similar thing, but I think it was mostly with himself.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't recommend that. But at least he was in a porn theater or something. So like I feel like that's a better excuse than Beetlejuice.
Yeah. It was
nothing about that screams erotic to me.
He was Yeah, I mean he was at least on topic or something. Right.
Yeah.
She was just disturbing everybody else and vaping in front of a pregnant woman and guy was motorboating her and then it's just
it's attention seeking behavior. I mean,
oh boy,
I know all about that because I teach kids who are like between the ages of 14 and 18. It's like, well, that's what they do. But they have an excuse because their prefrontal cortex is not yet developed.
Right.
It's like, you're a congresswoman. Like, you should have some semblance of decency. Like, I'm not much for, like, the respectability politics, but it's like, yeah, especially if your message is like, I'm a good Christian person.
Pro-family, yeah,
pro-family, family values, get all the smut off TV, all this. It's always been like this. This is the thing. It's people... Like, you go back in 1,000 years ago, the popes in Rome were doing the same stuff. They were like, be pious and, don't have sex outside of marriage. Meanwhile, they have multiple mistresses and they're embezzling money from the church and all this stuff. It's just...
And raping little boys.
Things never change.
Yeah.
Huh?
Raping little boys and...
Yeah, exactly. And covering it up, moving people around. It's just always been like this, and it upsets me that people are like, we're getting worse. Because I do think in a lot of ways we're getting better. But in a lot of ways, it's just nothing just really changes. Just the fashions change a little bit. Yeah. But I was going to say, I do think, this is like a little bit of a side tangent, but I do think that all congressmen and women and senators, pretty much anyone in like federal office, not only should have to... disclose all their campaign finance and stuff like that. But I think they should have to wear body cams at all times.
Mm.
That's body cams for police, but also body cams for all federal elected offices and lobbyists.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. But then we wouldn't have no Congress after a couple of days.
No, we wouldn't. We wouldn't.
That's funny. Yeah, and I'd love to talk about Trump, but it's just so confusing now. Most of the cases are getting up to the Supreme Court and causing further delays, and so we're just gonna have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think that one is kind of a wait and see type thing. But
Mitch McConnell's retiring, right?
Yeah, at the end of this term, he's done. I hope a lot of people in Congress all over kind of take note and start doing that, because that would be great. Because there's just, I tried my best not to be like ageist. And I think if you're like elderly, but you're still very, very with it cognitively and physically, I think that's great. Stay in office if you think you're going to do the best job. But we've seen a number of people who just clearly are sunsetting and they just keep getting elected. And I think part of that's on the parties and part of it's on voters to just, you can't, I mean, if you think someone's not that cognitive, you gotta vote for someone else.
Yeah, I think something people miss in the age discussion is that, you know, a lot of people look at Biden and, you know, they see that he does good things, and when they're on the other side, they say he can't be doing good things. He's so old, you know, and he's a speech impediment and so on. But I think what people don't realize is he's got thousands of people around him that are, you know, a lot of them are career people in Washington and so on that get things done. And he's been there for 100 years and they get things done. And really all he's got to do is make a decision every once in a while, you know, and oversee that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just not all about the guy or the girl that's there. That wasn't the right word.
Yeah.
It's
just, in a lot of ways, they are the face. I mean, but I still think it's important. And I'm not specifically calling out Biden. I mean, you can look at, like, Feinstein or McConnell. Like, it's just, people probably just need to retire. I think probably the answer is just to put in term limits for pretty much every position.
Yeah, I think that would be good. But, you know, kind of back to McConnell, he's been there. Let's say, I don't know how long he's been there. Let's just say 30 years or whatever it is.
I think it's at least.
So he's been there that long. He's had staff there a long time. They know how to do everything. They know, you know, it's just all in place. And it really has little to do with him except figuratively, you know, he's the face of it, you know, and things
right.
like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, but given that, I think Trump does a lot of damage, even though he's, you know, not competent and never has been. The thing kind of got highlighted this week. Now we're talking about politics, but the thing that got highlighted this week is that he, you know, really a lot of his businesses have failed. He had a casino that failed. That's what was highlighted. It's really hard for a casino to fail.
I was going to say, isn't the idiom that the house always wins? The
house always wins. And he's a genius, after all. He was.
We do know he's our big brain boy.
Yeah, he was trying to dismiss that. He said, well, the slots were too open, you know, or whatever you call it, when they too loose or whatever you call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
They
yeah,
pay out too much. That's still your problem. That's still your issue. You were running the casino. You owned the casino. So
that's the thing with this like post-reality world that we live in is you can just punt the football always. You can say, no, I was just too nice. I was too nice to run a casino, folks. I just gave away all my money.
My slots were too friendly.
I had to close it down, folks. But it's, you know, I'm just a nice guy. What can I say? Just so stupid, man. I just get so mad. I honestly have not like been really following American politics very much. I'm just like at world politics now because it's just a clown show.
Yeah,
it's insane. It's not. I'm in Taiwan. It's not great here either. They literally, like, when foreign diplomats come to they call it the legislative UN here, which is like kind of like Congress, but we have a unicameral Congress, not a bicameral Congress. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they fight so much in our legislature that literally, when foreign diplomats or like people come over, they'll pose in there like they're gonna fight. Because it's kind of like a joke that, like, oh, in Taiwan they just beat the hell out of each other in Congress or in the legislature.
Yeah.
So it's also ridiculous here. It's just humanity is kind of absurd to me sometimes.
Yeah. You know, indeed
the
it is.
Give these people so much power and they just act like children.
Okay. Now that we got that out of our system, we're officially stopping. We're out of politics for several months, right?
I'm never out of politics, but we can take a little break.
Take a little break. Okay. So the Pew research I shared with you says the title, around 4 in 10 Americans have become more spiritual over time. Fewer have become more religious.
Mm.
So there's a lot of different points in there, being more spiritual, being less spiritual. So being being more spiritual was 41%. Being more religious was 24%. Mm-hmm. So more people are moving towards spirituality in their whatever they however they define that.
Mm-hmm.
And only 24%, 16% less are becoming more religious. So
yeah, and 33% are becoming less religious.
Yeah. Well, that that even helps more, right? So,
yeah,
we're definitely moving away from being more religious. I just released a meme a minute ago that said if you have to go somewhere to be indoctrinated, you might be in a cult, you know. but literally, that's what we do. That's what religion does. Is it kind of moves towards that? Well, the more you're here, more we can convince you of what we're doing, and it's people are moving away from that, moving towards spirituality. I don't know if it's always good that people just take off, because there's a thought that you know, we move away from certainty, but there's also chaos when you move away from, you know, high control, those cult-like things. So, you know, just kind of warn people, there is chaos, you know, and it's hard at times, right?
Definitely.
It's confusing, you know, you have an identity crisis when you first stop going to church or whatever, you know. Your context is a little different. What do you think about this thing?
Yeah, I think it definitely, in terms of like the chaos stuff, like being a history and the sociology, psychology teacher, there's definitely a lot of societal benefits to things like whatever you want, using the term is too broad, using organized religion. But of course, there's also a lot of pain and things like that that go on it. But I think we have to look at building new versions of these things, building new communities. Because people, I mean, I think we've probably talked about this. We definitely talked about it off the podcast, but I think we've talked about it on here before too. People need communities the way our brains are designed. Mm-hmm. We have to. So yeah, you have to build these new networks. Because I mean, you look at like some of the best things that happen. I'll keep it American, because I assume your listenership is mostly a little more American centric, but like the Black Freedom Movement in America is like a very, very tied in with the Black Church. Like, so, I mean, yeah, like for.
Yeah, Pew also says 80% of Black Americans are Christians.
Yeah, I think, see this? I think that poll is really good, but the problem with all these words and with just language in general is it's very subjective. Yeah. So I agree with you, and I think they probably are, but it's like, what does that mean? Because I had like a lot of Black friends in the United States, and a lot of them would say they were Christian, but they would very rarely go to church. But again, that's the same for any kind of American. I had a lot of white friends that were like, oh yeah, I'm Christian, and then it's like, well, do you go to church? Do you read the Bible? No, I'm just Christian. It's like, okay, what does that mean?
But you still identify that way.
It's cultural. Yeah,
that's what I was gonna say. It's probably more cultural than anything.
So let's back up a little bit. You're talking about, you know, what we've always heard. The phrase is we're hardwired. People are hardwired for connection.
Yeah.
We did a poverty simulation at the thing we went to a week or two ago. I don't remember if you and I talked about that or not, but they divided people up into families and went through the simulation to see what it's like to be poor and so on. They said the currency of poverty is, so the currency of affluence, middle class, and so on is achievement. You know, so a teacher asks, you know, so the parent in that situation says to the teacher, mm-hmm. are you challenging my kid? Are they getting any grades? What options are they going to have for college? And so mm-hmm. the currency is achievement. But they said in poor families, the currency is relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about that relationship. So we're hardwired for connection, but, you know, then we say, well, then people need community. Well,
mm-hmm.
what's community? You know,
yeah.
And then it's definitely true that the, you know, the African American community, through civil rights and all that, the place they connected was in the church building. You know, it was
yeah.
like their city hall. It was their place where they came together to talk, you know, and
that's right. yeah.
strategize and all those things, where they built relationships. But you know, then an evangelical wants to go, well, see, you need community. Just, you know, you need to come to our big multi-million-dollar complex,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'll fly in my helicopter and deliver the sermon, you know. It's, I don't think it's the same.
You can't be flying, you know, you can't be flying commercial. Like, who was it? There's a video of one of the
yeah.
head pastors talking
yeah,
about
man.
How there's all the demons and
Kenneth Copeland.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh my gosh,
it's
funny, but also very sad at the same time. There's demons on there. And it's like, well, that's true, but it's not like a spiritual demon. It's like Greg in fourth row who drank too much vodka that he brought in like tiny little bottles in his carry-on bag. Like,
right.
Yeah, he's getting a little rowdy, but like it's not a demon.
Greg and Karen, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think especially in those kinds of situations, I think a lot of that's faux community anyway. Because, I mean, whether it's, I was going to specifically call it like mega churches, but like, I think even in some small town churches that we've been a part of, I think there was real community. I mean, I made a lot of lifelong friends from our church, some of the best friends of my life.
Sure.
But I also had connections with people that were totally built on like a faux relationship. Like
mm-hmm.
just, oh, we know your dad. Like, and that's a side thing that I've probably said before, but it's so weird just being a child and adults are walking up to you and be like, hey, JD, I know your dad. And I'm like, I don't know you. Get away from stranger danger. But...
yeah.
But like, I think a lot of that community is perfunctory. It's kind of fake. But that's, I don't know if that's, it's obviously not only in religion, but it is. We have to figure out how to build that like real community that's not based on hierarchies and these sorts of things. And I don't think that's easy. And I think to some degree, like with social media and things like that, you see these like communities get built, and some of them are very positive, but a lot of it is the same thing. It's very fake. It's very based on status and like how much money you make or like how many followers you have and all this nonsense. And I see that like in my realm on the, like in photography, where people who like make very pretty YouTube videos and have a lot of followers, they'll like they try to control everyone else, like kind of in these communities.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also do have real, genuine connection. I'll give a very nerdy example. Is I've just started playing a new video game, and it's only co-op. It's not competitive. There's no competition in this game. I mean, I guess you can compete for like who gets more kills, like who has a better KD or whatever.
Mm.
But it's one of the nicest communities I've ever been in. Like it's one of the, like you've been on Xbox Live before.
Yeah.
When you go into chat, you immediately hear 15 slurs. And someone's telling you how they're copulating with your mom, like
yeah.
immediately.
And half of them are 10 years old with the squeaky.
Yeah,
voice.
I was gonna say half of them have no hair under their arms, and they just can't stop telling you about their sexual prowess.
Yeah.
That's why I don't go into open chat often. And again, this is a really nerdy example, but I do on this game because. it's because it's cooperative and because everyone wants to work together. Of course, there's always going to be people who are toxic, but I've made like a number of people that I've added to my friends list on there because they're just, everyone's just like, yeah, man, like, oh, you're low level. Okay. Yeah. Well, no worries. We'll help you. Like, don't worry about it. Like that kind of stuff is good. And I think we need to, obviously that's also somewhat of not a real community. Like I'm not talking to those people every day, but we need to figure out how to create those kind of structures inside society without tying it. I think the big thing for me is hierarchy.
Yeah.
I think that when you start giving certain people more power and more money and things like that, that it gets problematic. Now I'm going to start to sound like a communist or an anarchist or something, but anyway.
Yeah, it's definitely, hierarchy is definitely a problem. If the sole reason for having that community is that we're alike, that's an issue, right? I think you need, if I'm a stroke survivor, I need some other stroke survivors to talk to. But you know, my beliefs, which admittedly for most Protestants in the United States, their beliefs are very narrow. Because they've split off from the other Baptist church down the road. You know, right. It's like the Third Baptist Church or the Seventh Baptist Church or whatever, or the Independent Fundamentalist Baptist Church or the Missionary Baptist. You know what I mean? And so we're together because our beliefs are exactly the same. And I know the number, it's 2. Because if you say, people say, I've probably told you this before, but people say, you don't believe in hell and you also don't believe in, and that's when they start pulling away. Well, I'm going to have to limit my time with you because you're so much different than me. You know, and you experienced that in small towns, right? So when we lived in small towns, we lived first in a town of 250 and then a village of 250 and then a town.
I think that's with cats and dogs too. I don't think it's just people.
Yeah, they're counting. It's like a Baptist church. They're counting everybody. The babies in the nursery, the cats and dogs, and but you know, there'd be one town that's 8 miles away from another town. They're essentially identical.
Yeah.
But sometimes they hate each other. You know,
despise each other.
As maybe one thing that happened, or just because their sports teams are different colors, you know.
I was going to say, even not something that happened, just some rumor that occurred. Like, I remember back at GBF, there was another church spreading rumors that we were, like, sacrificing chickens or something.
It was, like, giving away trips to Branson, and that's how so many people were coming to our church.
I just kept thinking, why have I not gotten in on that deal?
Yeah.
That's what I always think is when people are like, oh, they're giving away all this. It's like, well, where's mine? I would like to get on that. I'm going to leave the church and come back, try to get one of those trips to Branson. Yeah. Like I'm on a weird edition of Price is Right or something.
Right.
I personally wouldn't have took the Branson trip. I'd not enjoy Branson when I went there.
I've never actually been, to be honest.
It was like a bad version of Six Flags for me. No, it was like Six Flags without any rides, you know?
just long lines and expensive food, is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, and shows, you know, some of them, you know, of course, some of them were good and some of them were bad, but I don't get the hype. I mean, some people just live for Branson every year.
And sorry, there are a bunch of motorcycles driving by my house, but I think it's just a Missouri thing. I think I don't get it, but I've also never been, so I can't hate on it too much.
And it's all kind of down there in the Ozarks where the, you know, the Duggars are at. It's all kind of that kind of stuff. Anyway.
Yeah. I would like to go to the Ozarks just for the nature, but I don't think I need to go to. I'm not a big. The only time I go to like theme parks or those kind of touristy areas anyway, here is just for photography, which is rough for me because I have like weird social anxiety and stuff. But
so back to community. What makes a good community? We got off track there.
I think like I said, a big part of it is not elevating people. You cannot put people on pedestals because again, it's you can go back to the pre-Christ era. It just goes to people's heads, and they just try to get more and more power.
Yeah. So no heart, no hierarchy, which one of the toughest things to break, right?
Yeah. Or at the very least, if you, because sometimes there is, like, you need to delegate power and stuff. You need to have the most amount of checks and balances. Like, and I think also the other thing is for, like, leadership and stuff, like, we got to just start, and this goes for, I won't go back to politics, but it goes for politics as well, is, like, there's got to be, like, a one strike and you're done. Like, you messed up, sorry, like, it's over. Like, you're just, you can't be in this position anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you can be part of the community, and we'll try to help you reform. We're not just going to shame you or whatever. But, like, you messed up, and, you can't be trusted with this power anymore, at least for a very, very long time.
Yeah. Especially with sexual issues.
That's more of a, like, you need to go to, like, a very serious rehabilitation program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting to me that, like, you know, since you're an educator and so am I, and really mm-hmm. just any probably run-of-the-mill occupation, you know, you get caught in some type of sexual scandal and you don't get three strikes and you're out. It's basically, especially as an educator, here in the States, we go through training, right? Mm-hmm. We have to, it's mandatory training for like 7 hours on various, you know, could be bloodborne pathogens, but we do mm-hmm. a lot on sexual misconduct and sexual mm-hmm. harassment and things like that. So I'm like, and you know, corporations, people in corporations, you know, they go through sensitivity trainings and things like that through HR. And it's amazing that, you know, basically if something like that were to happen, a teacher would be out of a job, like immediately. There's, you know, and the same could be true in, you know, a corporate, just depending. I know there's circumstances where, you know, that probably hasn't happened as fast as people would like. But so it just surprises me that, like, in politics and in churches, we sweep that stuff under the rug, or we throw the word forgiveness and restoration out there.
Mm.
And by restoration, I mean they get to keep their position. Like, you
by
can
restoration, you mean, nothing changes.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you can have restorative practices and still, you know, keep other people around this person safe by not putting them back in that position. Yeah. It just surprises me that, like, for the most part, religion and politics are the two areas where I just don't see a lot of accountability when it comes to things like that. Other places, you would be gone in a heartbeat.
I think the reason for that is because they're making their own rules,
yeah.
You know?
Well,
like,
I know.
You get to, like, I mean, as a congressperson or as a senator, you set your own salary. You make the rules. Like, I mean, there was just a thing recently with the Supreme Court where they were basically like, no, we're not going to actually have a code of ethics. We're not going to have any oversight over us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, but it's exactly the same church. It's
the
pastor or the board makes all the rules. And of course you're not going to. But, like, yeah, I was when you started talking about that, I was thinking of, it's like every year or so I have to, like, go do a background check because there's some incident in Taiwan where it's like this teacher had an inappropriate relationship, and, like, every teacher in Taiwan has to go get a background check.
Mm-hmm.
It's like but no, not for pastors. Maybe that's something we should institute. Any religious leader, if one violates the law, everyone's got to go do a background check and go meet with a therapist or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we hear that, sorry, I'm interjecting, but we, like, at some of the churches that we were members after we kind of got out of the ministry, we heard a lot of pastors, you know, they have this kind of entourage around them, and they would speak about, you know, well, this is my accountability, and we hold each other accountable. And I don't know, like, that seems kind of iffy to me, because I don't know. Like,
It's not kind of iffy. It's not really acceptable. It's corruption. It's not how it works. It's like some like the head of a bunch of gangs are like, yeah, we'll police ourselves. Don't worry.
Right.
Have no fear.
And not to go too much into politics, but or like the police, where they're like, yeah, one of our guys shot him. It's okay. We'll deal with it. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, yeah, I'm sure you'll get to the bottom of this right away.
Right.
Make sure that make your power even stronger.
We interviewed a guy who's trying to help churches with trauma-informed stuff. And one thing he pointed out was, you know, biblical accountability. So biblical accountability could be if a 15-year-old woman gets raped or molested by the youth pastor. Mm-hmm. Biblical accountability would be that she has to face her accuser first.
Mm-hmm.
If she doesn't get a resolution there, then she would go to the board of elders in a closed door meeting with a bunch of men. That would be the next step, and then bring it before the congregation. Yeah. That's not going to work.
No.
And when this organization comes in to work with a church that's been through something like that, trying to set rules, what the church tends to do is to move towards how can we make this look okay? How can we, how can we get back to doing business? How do we
or just disappear entirely?
Yeah. How can we just make it go away so we can get back to business and have the least impact on our reputation? And he said the reputation of the church is the last thing you ought to be thinking about. The reputation of Congress is the last thing you ought to be thinking about. What you ought to be thinking about most is stop hurting people. Don't hurt people. And when you do, we're gonna take all kinds of measures. And maybe like in Taiwan, it's a little extreme. But at least someone's trying to prevent it from happening again instead of just washing over to protect the image of the church or the Congress or the party or whatever. That's not community, you know? And that I think community should be like a table, you know, where everybody comes to the table and just think of a Thanksgiving dinner. You know, and what if I, as a dad, say I'm going to control, you know, what you eat, and we're going to have a big orchestrated thing here, and I'm going to give a big speech, you know, and I'm going to tell you what to think and tell you how to interpret this and tell you what what we did. Or what about if at Thanksgiving we just came together and everybody brought something, you know, and we didn't try to orchestrate it, we didn't try to plan it all out. And no one was in charge, but we all had a voice at the table, you know, and we just came and talked about ideas and talked about, you know, things are different and things are the same. And, but once something works well, you know, whether it's a political party or a church or any kind of organization, once it has some success, right, then now we need a leader. You know, and to establish the patriarchy here. And now we're going to, you know, have rules. Now we're, you know, only certain people get to talk. Questions aren't really cool. You're just slowing down process. You know, you're slowing down progress. And that's what happens. So we can't say, well, what we need is community. Because we're hardwired for connection. We need community. But then you can't just make communities that abuse people and don't treat people fairly. And, you know, all we have is an organization that, like many of the corporations in the United States, abuses people and steals their money and all that kind of stuff. Anyway.
Yeah, I think to that point, I was... And maybe when you talk about sitting around the table and stuff, one of my favorite things about, like the best memories I have about church is like potlucks and youth group. Mm-hmm. Cause like youth group was, I mean, there was some input from some of the adults, obviously, but, I mean, for the most part, it was like we kind of branded ourselves, and we're all obviously equal. Like, I'm sure I didn't really need anything, but I'm sure there's like some politics to that. I'm sure it wasn't free of that. Nothing ever is. But yeah. Like, and then potlucks, it's the same thing. Like, everyone just brings food and we just sit around and talk. Like, it's, I mean, that was the best stuff. The stuff I wasn't a big fan of was all the politics of it, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It's just,
yeah,
it just gets gross and underhanded, and people are backstabbing each other. All these people that say they're like good Christian people and they just want the best and they just want to convert people. And then, yeah, the stuff they're saying behind is, not nice, let's say. What I wouldn't think it's Christian, but I don't know. I'm not really Christian, so maybe I'm uninformed.
And I think common interests, common goals is good, but common beliefs are not necessarily necessary. I mean,
yeah.
We were at that conference, a common goal, you know, help people with trauma, help teachers understand how they can deal with trauma, and so on. So we were kind of together as a community, but not talking about beliefs, not worried about who's in charge, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They have a board instead of a.
But you would know it. Like, the board members were just as involved in being a part of the breakout sessions. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, in the
yeah, none
audience,
of them spoke
it wasn't
either.
Right.
None of them spoke, you know, or asserted their power or. This is how it's going to go.
I mean, one of the board members that you met was actually working the registration table. It's like there wasn't this hierarchy like you guys are talking about. It's like we're all here to serve each other.
Yeah. And, you know, there's just learned helplessness, learned codependency, and things we get into in churches and organizations and governments and so on that we got to get better at it. And I think maybe we're moving there a little bit. At least we kind of understand it more than we used to. We don't think, well, it's just a given. I need to be, some pastor needs to tell me what to believe because I don't have any information. Well, now we have the internet, and now we have especially cell phones, you know, phones that we can access more than that old pastor in the 50s ever could have had access to, you know.
Or some serf or peasant, you know, even a couple hundred years ago, where it's you literally have access to nothing because you can't read.
Yeah. So
and a book costs $500.
One more thing. This is so the next thing is from Matt Dillahunty. I don't know his situation exactly. I'm just pretty sure he's an atheist. He addresses Christianity quite a bit. Have you heard of him before?
I feel like I've heard the name somewhere, but I don't know. It may be one of those things where someone's like, "Did you hear this band before?" And I'm like, "I think so, but I probably haven't. I don't know."
So we've been all over the place today, but so this would be right in line with that. But this is about two minutes. Let's listen to it, and then we'll kind of break it up a little bit.
The reason I don't believe is because I discovered fallacies in the reasons for belief, a lack of evidence, an inability to demonstrate the truth of the proposition. It's demonstrated here. Mike is convinced that, hey, if our current understanding of what's possible doesn't account for something, we can conclude that it's supernatural. I can't buy that. I want to know what the explanation is, not how I'm going to label it as not natural. I joke that this was going to take multiple lifetimes, so I investigated Buddhism next to see if I would have multiple lifetimes to explore it. I got more into philosophy specifically to find out what kind of God might exist in order to direct my search towards the truth. And through that process and an understanding of critical thinking, logical reasoning, fallacies, the nature of evidence, and what we can and can't demonstrate, I found that I was unable, as was anyone else I was able to talk to demonstrate a good reason for belief. And by the way, I know that this will make many of you, probably including you, Jim, and I'm sorry, sad. I know it makes my parents sad. You guys aren't the enemy. I don't hate you. You're not stupid. My IQ didn't go up when I stopped believing. I don't accept what you do, and I think I have good reasons for it. And when I try to get good reasons from believers, they seem to fail, which I think explains why there is so much disagreement, even within just Christianity, let alone other world religions. From my perspective, it's extra sad that you're sad about someone essentially being liberated and free, and free to explore and free to change their mind. And my search continues to do. I think that it's likely that I'm going to find it. No, because for thousands of years, we've had the same arguments over and over and over and over again. But belief is not a choice. What you accept to be true is the result of what you are convinced of. And you can become convinced for good reasons or bad reasons. I want to become convinced for good reasons. I haven't seen good reasons to believe Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, definitely not Scientology, blah, blah, blah.
The inability to demonstrate the truth or proposition, how does that strike you?
I think I tend to agree. I think when I was younger, especially elementary school, junior high school probably too, I was kind of that, like what he says at the beginning about, he refers to some other guy, John or something, and he says, you know, anything that can't be explained by, I forget what he said, something like that can't be explained or be explained with science or something can be ascribed to supernatural causes.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of like God of the gaps type thing. Yeah. I used to, that's kind of where I was when I was a child. I think once I got to like high school and stuff, I was just like, no, you got to give me an explanation. Mm-hmm. I can't deal with that. So that, I think that's the thing that gets me the most. And I don't begrudge anyone for kind of feeling that way, but I don't think that then you can become dogmatic about it, because if it is this ethereal, like, explanation, then you have to just accept that you don't understand it either.
Right.
Because I do whatever ooey-wooey spiritual stuff, like go pray in Taoist temples and Buddhist temples. Gasp. Like, so mm-hmm. I'm such a bad guy. I think that kind of stuff is fine enough, but I do think it can lead, when you start relying on that way too much, to bad places, because it's interesting that it does start like that, where it's like, well, we don't know, and so it must be a divine intervention, even though it's probably not. It's probably something we can explain with science. But I think that part is fine. But once we start to go into, okay, well, that's why you need to follow my dogma, as if I can understand this interpretation.
Right.
And whenever I encounter people who are like, it's especially Christians, but it honestly goes for everyone, is like, if you're going to get super dogmatic about it, it's like, okay, have you read the original translation? Like, you speak Aramaic and Greek and also Latin, right? Like, you can speak all these. No? Oh, okay. Well, then please don't come at me with that. Like, I don't want
right.
to hear it.
Right. That was so we've given ourselves permission. We left the certainty of evangelical Christianity, and you move away from that certainty. And like we talked before, there's some chaos to that, right? So you look for people that understand other things, like atheism and nihilism, and but then also things like inner spirituality, shamanism, tarot, and Taoism, and et cetera. So you look for people, who have some experience. And. And you find people like that are doing gene keys and Akashic records. There's all kind, there's all kinds of stuff out there. And even really, you don't accomplish much with like Satanism and things like that, because it's really a political deal. It's not even a religious thing in most cases to them. But anyway, mm-hmm. you So you open yourself up and say, and of course, that's really dangerous when you're in Christianity to do look at anything else or get close to it, or it might sting you or something, you know. And even the flu shot, you know, the COVID shot could be demonic. But anyway, so you get out there and you start investigating some of these things. You find like a practitioner that has been doing it for a while. But then you find sometimes you find the same attitude or there of this is the way, you know. And sometimes some of that stuff sounds like the God has a purpose in Christianity. God has a purpose for your life. Well, what is it? Well, you're going to have to find it. And when you don't find it, then you kind of mesh up into the pastor's dream, the pastor's purpose, or the church's purpose and plan for your life. And that's what, you know, you invest so much in that you're invested, literally invested, and you don't want to move away from that. So you get more dogmatic about it. And then, like you said, just, well, whatever's not explainable, that's because God's unexplainable. Right. Yet I'm dogmatic about these other points.
Yeah.
They're just slightly different than the fluff-a-fluff Baptist church down the road, you know. It's one thing that stuck out to me was he said, "You seem sad about me being liberated." I think that's one of the best lines in his that's a segment of his speech or a segment of his response to somebody on stage. He said, you know, even my parents, you know, right now, they're sad because I found some liberation, you know, from all the dogmatic theology and practices and all of that. He said, I don't see you as the enemy. I just want you to have good reasons for believing or not believing, you know.
Yeah, and for me, I don't even think you need to have good reasons. Like, sometimes you just, I don't know. I don't have good reasons for going to pray to Tudi Gong, the earth god in Taiwan, or to what, like, it's just that, I mean, I guess the good reason is that it brings me peace.
That's what I was going to say, but if it's just that it brings you some inner peace, that should be reason enough, in my opinion.
I concur as long as it's not hurting anyone. Agreed. I mean, I think that connected with your first point, I think there's a good Bible verse for this, which is 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 21 and 22, which is, but test all things, keep what is good, and stay away from everything that is evil. I think you don't, as long as you're not, my thing has always been, I do not care what you believe. And as long as it is helping you and not hurting anyone else, then that's great.
Right.
It's a very almost like libertarian approach to religion. It's just like, I just don't care. I just don't care what you believe. But if you're going to tell me what I have to believe, then we're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
And that's where, if you're trying to control other people's bodies or what they're allowed to do and say, then we have a problem. But otherwise, whatever you want to believe, that's great. But I also think there's something to the fact that, you know, I don't have the verse off the top of my head, but the verse, who was it? Was it Peter that said, you know, don't pray in public. Go pray in your closet.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be showing off. If you're showing your religion off, that's a red flag for me. I think it's fine to celebrate your religion, but if you're doing it in a performative nature, it just rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah,
because those are private matters. But hey, there was something else I was going to say, but I forgot.
Sorry, can you?
No, you're fine.
Dig a little deeper on that. So, what, in your opinion, is the difference between celebrating and performative? Especially it comes to religion, because I know, like in Taiwan, you guys have a lot of celebrations and.
That was exactly what I was going to say. Is the first thing that comes to my mind is what we call Miaohui, like a temple festival. So I go out with the boys, and we all put on our temple, like the you know, we all have the same T-shirt, we all have the same hat, and we go out, we parade the gods around, and we take them to other temples so they can meet their friends. And they're celebrating their birthday or whatever. But it's not a, there's no proselytization. There's no people on the street going, you're doing the wrong thing. You're going to hell. No, it's just, it's literally just a celebration. There's no talk about anything else. We just go and we usually, like, you know, we parade the gods through the streets. We light off fireworks, which I understand could probably be a little bit annoying, but hey. And then, you know, and then we go, and then at the end we stop and we eat together, and then we probably have a couple beers, and that's pretty much what it is.
That's why you're in Taiwan, because of the fireworks.
I
remember a statement. You remember your statement you made in high school?
Well, no, I don't actually.
Something like, you know, what is your favorite holiday? You said, do you remember what you said?
I don't.
4th of July, because who doesn't like to blow things up?
No, I do remember that statement. That's true, though. That's a good young Katie had said on straight. That's true. It is fun to blow stuff up. I mean, you just, I like to eat food and I like to blow stuff up. Yeah. And especially if I can do that in a way that's not going to hurt anybody else. So, right.
But in the words of Jim Gaffigan, also, you know, when can you have a hamburger and a hot dog and a brat? Because it's what the founding fathers would have wanted for us to eat all this meat.
So it's certainly what Benjamin Franklin would have wanted. That guy was a party animal.
Yeah.
But I don't eat the meat anymore, but I do eat a lot of food. So
yeah, indeed.
It's fun.
So yeah, so I think the guy was saying, you know, if you're going to say I have to believe what you believe because it's absolutely right, you better have some good reasons.
Yeah.
For that. Yeah. You know, because I have fairly good reasons why I don't believe that. And he is kind of a Bible scholar and so on, even though he's an atheist. But you mentioned something about that kind of made me think of intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've been learning is that there really should be a good balance of there's people I can go to that have experienced something I haven't experienced. And so I learn from them, right?
Yeah.
About a different culture or different religion or different practice that can help me. But also I have to have intuition.
Mm-hmm.
I have to have intuition and I need to be developing that. Need to be sounds like someone's commanding me to, Ben. You know, over time we develop your intuition. Well, it's not just intuition, you know. It's not just because I feel like it. Totally. It is partially. Mm-hmm. But it's also because then I seek out good guides, you know, that are wise and that help me learn. I could also read, I guess, if we really had to. But, you know, all of that. And all those are pieces of the puzzle, and it's just so tempting when you get to a certain place with one thing to think that you know everything, and you don't know what you don't know, and then everybody else should think like me. And that's the thing that I'm rehabilitating from still, from organized religion.
Well, I think that's exactly it. You gotta seek out people with wisdom and with expertise, but you also, you can't do the hierarchy thing where you put them on a pedestal, and you also have to constantly be seeking out new stuff I think about one of the main things that I teach is history, and it's just like every historian is super dialed into, or most of them at like the higher echelons are like dialed into a certain period. Like you have people that are like just only like their main focus is like a 10 year period, or like the Napoleonic Wars or something, and they spend their whole lives studying that, and they still have disagreements. So it's just like you cannot get locked in and just be like especially if you're saying I know everything about everything. Like it's preposterous. Yeah, we have a lot of knowledge at our fingertips, but most people don't actually spend their time doing research on those things. They spend most of their time on TikTok or Facebook Reels, which is not good in my opinion, but I understand people need a little bit of relaxation time. But the point is that you can't be an expert on everything. It's just impossible. And I think it's ridiculous for people to be. That's why I just stopped being so dogmatic. And the other thing is that I just ask people questions. If I think I don't agree with someone, I try to get to the point where I don't argue with them, because I love to argue. But I, what I do is I argue with my friends. And for other people, if they say something that I think is preposterous, I'll just be like, oh, really? Well, okay, so why do you think that? Or what's your evidence for that? And again, in a lot of cases, they can't actually give evidence. And then it's like, okay, well, you've been fooled by something, or you just believe this because someone told you to.
Or just admit you do it because you want to do it, or you like to do it.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with doing something because you like it. It's the proselytization is my big problem. Or telling people they're going to burn in eternal hellfire or something if they don't, you know, go to ABC Baptist Church.
Yeah, and a lot of that fear stuff is intentionally traumatizing to people. You're just traumatizing them, putting fear into them so that they'll accept whatever you're selling. And that doesn't have to be a church. That's an insurance salesman too. You know,
it's literally they're buying what you're selling because it's you want to make money or you want to gain power. I mean, money and power for time immemorial has just always been, that's been the driving factor for most religion or politics or, yeah, like you said, an insurance salesman, any of that. That's what it's about. I want to get mine. And so whatever I have to tell you or make you scared of or whatever is what I'm going to do. Because that's how I make sure I take care of my family, which is a human instinct. But it's not a good way to build your belief system.
So maybe next time we can talk about power differentials. That's something I'm learning about, something I was involved in but never understood until recently or begun to understand it. We could talk about that next time, maybe.
I'm all right with that. I'll do my best to turn you into an anarchist.
Yeah. I've been accused of that at times. I don't know totally what it means, so I don't know whether to be offended or not.
I'm not really an anarchist. I do like some of their ideas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend that mentions that word. And anyway, anything else you want to share with us before we wrap this segment up?
Oh, I've been staring at, I went and did photography most of the day today. And then I came back and just stared at the computer screen making notes for sociology.
Yeah.
So my brain's a little fried. But
It's 11 o'clock.
Yeah, it's like after 11, yeah. But I don't know. My hope is just that people just chill out. Everyone just chill out. Mm-hmm. It's going to be all right. We're on this weird, oddly shaped rock that just happens to be perfectly, perfect for our human survival that we're slowly destroying, hurtling through space. We don't know what we're doing. We have no idea. We've been messing it up for a long time. It's okay. If we just stop being jerks to each other, we can probably figure some of this stuff out.
Yeah, I
that's
agree.
My thing.
I agree.
Just be nice to people is kind of my philosophy.
Stop
hurting people.
Why can't we be friends? Am I right?
Come together right now.
Man.
So, man, I appreciate the Beatles songs more in my deconstruction and so on. But anyway, music, all that's... We're going to get off into another topic. We got to close this up. But I look forward to next time. We need to do it in a couple of weeks and keep this going. Thanks for Mom, a.k.a. Laura, sitting in today.
Thanks, Ma.
No worries.
She didn't say a lot, but that's okay.
But what I did say was...
But what she did say
was powerful.
Okay? It was moving. It was wise.
It always is.
I find that most people that share, rarely interject, tend to say the most poignant things.
Yeah.
I'll say.
Yeah, indeed.
That's Mom today.
That's me today.
Well, thanks for stopping in, and thanks to the listeners for listening. As always, be where you are, be who you are, and be at peace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Desert Sanctuary Podcast.
Remember, all who wander in the desert are not lost.
We believe all of our stories are sacred.
We are always here if you need someone to hear your story.
Check out our blog on Pathios and also our YouTube channel.
And stay tuned for our Leaning Forward Conference.
Remember, we love you.
And be at peace.